Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Cattlemen's Congress Conversation. A chance to catch up on the nation's best beef cattle show, put on by cattlemen for cattlemen. Now here's your host, Mr. Ron Hayes.
Thanks, Kirby, and welcome to another Cattlemen's Congress Conversation. A couple of things for you today. First, an in-depth conversation with Dr. Bob Weber of Kansas State University. We're talking all things EPDs and genomics with Dr. Weber and where we're going in that part of the business. He was a part of the Cattlemen's Conference this past May at Oklahoma State University in Stillwater, and he's very active in working with several of the breeds when it comes to improving their genetic potential. Then our second feature for this particular podcast is all about Speckle Park, one of the new breeds here at Cattlemen's Congress. We'll tell you more about that here in just a few moments. First of all, let's start our conversation with Dr. Bob Weber of K-State. Bob, you were talking during the Limousine annual meeting here at Congress about the acceleration of genomics and EPDs that we have available to us, more and more tools all the time, it seems.
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the really important things for both seed stock and commercial producers to recognize is that we are well into the adoption and implementation phases of genomic technology in the beef space. And I know there's lots of producers out in the world that EPDs are either cussed or discussed at frequent kitchen tables and bull sales. But the tools really do work. And in fact, the more producers are engaged in data collection across the range of traits that we evaluate, the better job the genomics tools do. It's important for commercial and seed stock producers to recognize that our current genomic technology is an association kind of marker approach. And so we're not describing the exact genes that are influential in the genome of the cattle, but the markers let us identify those genomic regions, kind of like an ear tag on a piece of DNA. And the more information we supply to the evaluation in terms of phenotypes across the range of performance characteristics of the animals, the better job our prediction models do. And we've seen that a lot of the clients that I work with utilize the IGS or International Genetic Solutions evaluation. And as we do cow herd projects and collect data to describe not only the maternal performance, but growth and carcass, that genomic prediction capacity gets better and better over time. And so I think many producers were hesitant early on to be engaged because it was hard to see the impact of the genomic tools. But the reality is that we're in a spot now where, particularly, say, for a seed stock female, her genomic profile contributes more information to the genetic evaluation than her lifetime of natural calves does. And so it's important for seed stock producers, in particular, to genotype replace female candidates and use that information in the selection of females to go into the herd, because you can plot your genetic destiny in your weaned heifer selection. Commercial producers can do the same thing, right? So we've got a number of tools available, maybe not quite as far down the pipeline in terms of production and robustness as the seed stock space, but we're getting there. We just recently had a Beef Improvement Federation genetic prediction workshop in Kansas City right before Christmas, where we spent a couple of days talking about the next wave of genomics technologies that will be implemented in the beef space. And that's really around the idea of low-pass sequencing data. So detailing the entire beef genome at a relatively low resolution, but lots and lots of animals genotyped and sequenced at low cost will provide us a breadth of information to actually go find the causal mutations that affect the performance attributes of our cattle. So really exciting time to be engaged in beef cattle genetics and genomics. And principally, I'm an extension guy. And so the utility of the application's always been a concern for me, for our commercial and seed stock producers. And genomics is at the spot where really impactful in our business and will continue to be so.
So, I've heard all the breeds, it seems like, really preaching the need for the phenotype information be put back into the system.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, early on, producers might have gotten the idea that, well, I can genotype and not have to record phenotypes. And that's actually the opposite. Our genomic technology is a pretty substantial investment. A lot of times it's a $50 a head sort of cost. Without the phenotypic information to tie to and relate back to, the genomics is of no use to us. So if you're collecting genomic data, do yourself a favor and actually collect the phenotypes and expand the phenotype collection that you do. Don't just collect birth weight, weaning weight, yearling weight. Calving ease data, carcass data, feed intake data. You know, as we think about sustainability and the future of our business, doing a better job of documenting maternal performance and feed intake will be really critical to us.
You talked about that we're looking forward to trying to look at that next wave of information or things that can be predicted. What's out there for EPDs?
Yeah, so some of the stuff that's going on in development, you know, we continue to work on both direct measures of dry matter intake, expand the access, and carcass data is as important as it is to our business, as one that's lagged across many breed organizations because it's expensive and difficult to collect. Mature cow weights is another area that really important from a selection index standpoint because it describes cost of production for our cows, very sparsely reported in almost every U.S. beef breed. And so I think we need to continue to do lots of our existing trait stuff, but also get an eye for the future. So I know at Kansas State where I work, we're working with colleagues, Megan Rolfe and Jenny Borman, David Grieger on some male fertility work. So trying to understand differences in breeding soundness exams and how those influence conception rate and male fertility is a way to improve the number of bulls that get through seed stock production and out into the commercial space to improve that efficiency. Work on maintenance energy requirements or maintenance requirement of cows measured by gas flux data. So measuring some of the sustainability stuff with methane, CO2 and O2 consumption and emission to do a better job predicting sort of metabolic rate of cows and understand the interaction of that across season. So lots of places interested in kind of this wave of sustainability discussion.
Yeah. On that, sustainability is one of those hot words. I mean, still a lot of folks pointing fingers at the cattle industry over methane emissions. You know, how do we get maybe our arms around that, and how do we use that to show that cattle are not necessarily the bad guys?
Yeah, I think you're right, Ron. I think I'm engaged in a lot of those sustainability discussions. Methane's one of the primary focal ones from our consumers. I look at it, again, kind of through the extension lens. Methane is energy loss to our cow herd. And if there's a way we can capture that energy, and some estimates say maybe upwards of maybe 10% of the energy consumed by the cow is blown off as methane. If we can capture those calories and use them, that's to our advantage, both from a production standpoint, but certainly as an environmental improvement and impact of our cows in the environment. The challenge is that data is really difficult to collect, and so there's a lot of work going on to see if we can figure out better sort of indicators of methane emission. I know dairy space does some direct analysis of milk to estimate what that methane emission rate is. So we've got a lot of work to do in that area. And I sometimes think producers, because of that lots of work to do, think we don't have stuff to do or what we can do right now. Mm-hmm. And exactly the opposite is true. We know from a sustainability perspective, I often think about it as an efficiency exercise. And I think long run, our consuming public is probably going to demand that we decrease methane emissions over time. But certainly in the short run, we can do a better job of producing beef at the emissions level we have, right? So improving efficiency, reproductive efficiency of our cow herd. Cows are the main source of methane emission because they're consuming roughage and forage out on pasture.
Right.
So if we can make sure our cows are more reproductively efficient, we get to wean off more calves per kilogram of methane emission. We've improved what environmentalists call intensity of our emission. And I think that's an important thing for us to think about. And it supports almost all of the best practices or best management practices we've advocated from an extension perspective, for the last two or three decades. And so, really getting our eye back on maternal performance and reproductive efficiency and biological efficiency of our cow herd dramatically improves any of those sustainability sort of outcomes because we've done a better job producing a weaned calf relative to the amount of emissions that we've produced.
And I guess what doing the right thing is something we'll always hear about in the cattle industry. When it comes to making that animal more efficient, that's doing the right thing from a climate perspective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, we're one of the few species, because we're ruminants, that we get to take advantage of both of those improvements, right? We get to claim an improvement in environmental footprint, but we should also be more profitable, right? And that's an important part of sustainability too. I'm a big believer in the idea that, you know, we've got a social license to operate that's dependent on both of our animal welfare characteristics, our land use decisions, the emissions that we provide into the environment, but profit has to be part of that discussion.
What's kind of a big picture here of all the breeds? Got, you know, 24 breeds total at Cattlemen's Congress. How do breeds interact with each other? I know you've talked a lot, and Mark Anderson talked here at the Limousine meeting about, you know, trying to work and interact with the Angus and some of the other key breeds.
Yeah, great question. And I think there's maybe more collaboration today across breed organizations, maybe any time in history, really. And a lot of it's driven through the idea of, you know, some of these problems, you know, sustainability as a topic is big enough that not any one breed organization can tackle it on their own. But in the space of, you know, genetic improvements, the same kind of idea. You know, I work closely with a number of breeds involved in the International Genetic Solutions platform. You know, collaborating breeds have come together to resource state-of-the-art genetic evaluation. It's got about 22 million pedigreed animals in it across, I think there's 4 or 5 continents represented now. That collaboration has really driven innovation. And so, you know, I think the need has helped drive the collaborative ability and capacity to do that and the willingness to do that. But I also think, you know, organizations like I work closely with the Beef Improvement Federation has helped drive that environment of collaboration and coming together to help understand the problem. We may all try and solve it a little bit different way, but collectively coming together and helping define and understand the problem has been really beneficial for our industry.
What's 2024 look like, you think, as far as this work that we need to be doing?
Yeah, great question, Ron. You know, 2024, I'm hopeful is you know, productive in the, you know, continued drive for understanding and utilization of the genomics tools. We've got a lot of work to do, highlighted again by our recent genetic prediction workshop. That meeting happens about every 5 years and is sort of predictive of what's going to, you know, our work plan for the next 5 years. And we got a lot of work to do. And so, you know, year one in that exercise is a lot of brainstorming and thinking and development of those collaborative relationships we talked about a minute ago. I'm hopeful that we figure out in 2024 more efficient and cost-effective ways to measure methane. If I could wave my magic wand, having something that producers could do at the seed stock level inexpensively and effectively to help us get our arms around that quickly, I think would be outstanding progress in 2024.
One last question. We haven't really touched on the conversation a lot of folks are having regarding gene editing. How does that all fit into this whole conversation?
Yeah, great question, Ron. And gene editing is one that's getting a fair bit of conversation at, you know, Breed Association annual meetings. I happen to be here at Cattlemen's Congress and attending the Limousine Foundation annual meeting. Lots of questions around genome editing, both from a technical standpoint. We know we can go in and when we have a particular gene target, we can make modifications. We've got a framework through USDA and FDA to manage those and identify them. I think the two biggest questions that stand out to me are, what is the consumer acceptance of gene-edited products, regardless of similarity in the marketplace or not? And I happen to be a supporter of gene editing because I think it offers us another genetics tool. But we've got to be sensible about how we approach it and how we use it. The other challenge for us is for most of the traits of our beef cattle suite of genetic improvement, there's lots of genes and lots of interactions amongst those genes, and we don't know what the gene targets are. And so, you know, traits like coat color and horn pole that are the current targets of gene editing, we know what those genes are and how to modify and what the existing natural modification that was, or, you know, mutation that resulted in those phenotypes is, so we can go in and induce it in animals that don't have that particular mutation. For most of the other traits, you know, if we wanted to make a change to improve marbling, I'm not sure we know where to start. Yeah. And that maybe that gives us some cushion, too, of time to think and explore and make a really thoughtful implementation in our business.
I guess the conversation about maybe on some animal health issues, the BVD, for example, a conversation, that is something that we can get our arms around?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of mutation or variants identified in the animal health space. And I think, you know, it's probably as an industry smart for us to attack things that we know have substantial animal welfare and animal improvement characteristics. So, you know, I don't think anybody would argue that improving the healthfulness of livestock isn't a good decision, right? You know, horn pulled, you know, improving animal and animal handler safety, pretty much everybody can get behind that argument, right? Making them more adapted to their environment by changing their coat color, probably can get around that argument. And I think that helps us maybe have more conversations with our consuming public about understanding what the edits are, and that they're already existing in nature. We've just moved them from one population of beef cattle into another population. And it's not transgenics where we've taken genes from another species and induced, which I think is a whole nother level of complexity for our consumers to get their heads around.
Thanks, Bob. Dr. Bob Weber, Kansas State University. We promised you one more thing on this episode of Cattlemen's Congress Conversation, and that's a look at one of the new kids on the block, relatively speaking, when it comes to breeds that are a part of Cattlemen's Congress. We're talking about the Speckle Park breed, originated out of Canada. For the second year in a row, the American Speckle Park Association has brought their breed to town, and some of their Canadian neighbors that have helped originate the Speckle Park breed have been there in support of them here at Cattlemen's Congress. We had a chance to talk to a couple of the Canadians that have come to Oklahoma City representing the Speckle Park breed. Corey Duscher, one of the originators of the American Speckle Park Association, actually working with his neighbors down here south of the border. He's from Saskatchewan, a former president of the Canadians Association, and the current president of the Canadian Speckle Park Association, Janice Harris-Simchek. We asked Corey to tell us a little bit about the makeup of the Speckle Park breed and, well, basically how it was originated with the first crossings that were made in Canada.
Of Black Angus, Shorthorn, and British White Park cattle. And since 2006, there's been a closed herd book, and we were recognized as a breed at that point. And since then, the breed has expanded from Canada to all through Europe, Australia, through the States. It's now down into South America and is rapidly growing.
What's the reason, you think, for the growth?
The carcass is the big thing with Speckle Park breed. They're a great terminal and maternal cross on both sides. They produce great females, and the carcass is almost second to none. They're high marbling, easy doing, high yielding, very high feed conversion rates, so that, you know, you can put less feed in them and get more product back out.
Janice, you're president now of the Canadian Speckle Park Association. What got you interested in the breed?
Initially, Ron, it was the IAPL of the Speckle Park that got us interested. And because they were a Canadian breed that was developed in Canada, we thought that was pretty cool too. What we learned later is they had a lot more to offer the beef industry, along with their maternal traits, their feed conversion, their doability. Docility is another attribute of the breed. We love everything about them, truthfully. So
tell me about the folks that have come in to exhibit this year here at Congress.
So, there would be a fairly large group from Canada that came down just to support the American group. That's where we're from, because they are just getting off the ground, basically, right? So, and then there was American people here. I would say the numbers were probably double what they were last year, which is showing huge growth already, right? The junior show itself, we probably doubled in the amount of numbers that were shown there, too. So I think if we can just continue to do that, it's good for the breed, definitely.
Corey, in your mind, what's the fit for Speckle Park in the U.S. cattle industry?
I think the fit will be definitely in the feedlot side and on the kill side, getting to the consumer with a higher quality product. They're a moderate animal, a moderate plus animal, so you get that steak the size that people want. With a very high quality, high marbling, high EMA, it's a great product that way. And we haven't had a breed that the animals don't cross with. We've crossed them with just about everything. They go anywhere from being crossed with, you know, Angus, Hereford, Shorthorn, Simmental here to, you know, getting over into Australia and crossing with the Boss Indicus cattle over there and adding quality, adding yield, and retaining that hardiness that they need to for the rough conditions. That's kind of a real cool attribute to Speckle Park, is they can go from the, you know, the plus 120 degree weather in Australia to the minus 40 degree weather in Canada, and they thrive in pretty much any condition and environment you put them in.
What's the hopes for 2024 for the breed?
Just to continue, I think we just do need to get this breed more exposure all the time. I think the more people can see them, what they have to offer the beef industry, we just need to get out there and so that people can see them, right? Most people in the United States don't even know what the breed is, so...
Yeah. Being introduced to it.
Yes, they are being introduced to it. So just exposure, exposure, exposure.
And you can check out their websites. The American Speckle Park Association is AmericanSpecklePark.com. And the Canadian Association is CanadianSpecklePark.ca. Check out their websites. A lot of good information about how the breed has originated. And you can also get a directory of those producers that are involved with Speckle Park at this time. And that's it for this episode of Cattlemen's Congress Conversation. Learn more about Cattlemen's Congress by going to the website, cattlemenscongress.com. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you down the road. I'm Ron Hayes reporting.